Chapter 14, Alfred, 1935. By 1935, just 3 years later, the world had changed. Adolf Hitler had become the Chancellor of Germany under the promises of renewed economic growth and stability, a turnaround badly needed because of the economic sanctions placed upon them after their misdeeds of the Great War years earlier. In the United States, despite the terrible hardships brought on by the Great Depression, San Francisco had been able to ease the public's fear of earthquakes, and its population had exploded as construction was starting on the Golden Gate Bridge. Children were little concerned about financial hardships, but instead mourned the death of Balto, the heroic canine who'd gallantly delivered diphtheria antitoxin into Nome, Alaska, an event eulogized in papers across the country. In Baltimore, a doctor at Johns Hopkins Hospital was quickly becoming the most respected child psychiatrist in the United States. Between seeing patients, he was consumed with writing a massive 500-page compendium pediatricians might use to help them understand the inner workings of the adolescent mind. The book was not based on imaginary children, but was the outcome of the study of large numbers of actual children as they happened to come before him in the outpatient department and wards of the clinic at Harriet Lane. It was called Child Psychiatry and would be the only work on the subject for years to come. In the book, Dr. Leo Kanner, an Austrian immigrant from post-World War I Germany, covered every physical condition, symptom, and problem imaginable in the field of child psychiatry, from Heller's disease to tuberous sclerosis, from sleeping behaviors to eating disorders, not to mention a thorough history of his chosen discipline. He had plenty of material to work from. With generous funding from the Macy and Rockefeller Foundations, he had been tasked at Johns Hopkins with establishing the first child psychiatry clinic in the United States, an assignment he relished as it gave him direct access to many of the most vexing mental illness cases in the country. In late autumn, a local Baltimore mother, herself a clinical psychologist, brought in her 3.5-year-old son, Alfred, for a consultation with Kanner. After having developed normally, sitting up at 5 months old and walking at 14 months, some unusual behaviors had emerged, behaviors she couldn't make sense of. He had difficulty with language and often confused his pronouns, mistaking I for you and you for me. He would repeat the same fragments of sentences over and over. By themselves, these actions might be considered odd, but another set of behaviors he displayed gave her more concern. Alfred would become troubled if the patterns of things were disrupted, such as the time at which the sun or moon set. Most peculiar was the disinterest he had in playing with other children. Although he was seemingly capable of social activity, he would leave any playground equipment he'd commandeered if another child approached. Such was his dislike of human interaction. With other people around, Alfred could not relax and had a strange fear of certain mechanical noises, meat grinders, vacuum cleaners, and streetcars. After spending a considerable amount of time observing his behavior, Dr. Kanner performed, with much difficulty, an IQ test and was shocked to place Alfred's score at 140, well within the gifted category. In some ways, Alfred seemed to have serious mental deficiencies, but in others, he excelled beyond what children twice his age could accomplish. There were a number of conflicting traits and behaviors displayed by the boy which the psychiatrist had trouble reckoning. Kanner had seen plenty of cases of schizophrenia and childhood psychosis, the closest diagnoses he could relate. But there were no signs of hallucination or paranoia, a common trait of schizophrenia. Alfred had an incredible memory, far greater than what an adult in perfect mental health would have been capable of, and could occasionally develop an all-consuming fear of an innocuous event, such as bread being put in the toaster oven, an occurrence for which he would become terrified the bread would burn and get hurt. When Alfred returned years later, he developed a peculiar way of talking. Asked to describe a balloon, he replied that it was, quote, made out of lined rubber and has air in it, and some have gas, and sometimes they go up in the air, and sometimes they can hold up, and when they get a hole in it, they'll bust up. If people squeeze, they'll bust. Isn't it right? End quote. A tiger was described as, quote, a thing, animal, striped, like a cat, can scratch, eats people up, wild, lives in the jungle sometimes and in the forests, mostly in the jungle. Isn't it right? End quote. This rapid-fire patter could continue unabated, as if any slackening in pace would cause him anxiety. A potential genetic source of Alfred's problem offered further bewilderment. At the time, heredity was considered the primary cause of mental illness plaguing so many, the main reason enormous mental asylums and institutions had been constructed across the country. In an attempt to illuminate the cause of psychological disorders, complex genealogical maps were often constructed of someone's parents, aunts, uncles, grand, and great-parents, listing whatever mental deficiencies each person had displayed. Doctors were convinced any case of, quote, feeble-mindedness could be traced down through the generations if only enough family history could be acquired. A bird's-eye view of the genealogical record might reveal a facial tic here, a nervous temperament there, and the obvious provenance of someone's disorder would come into focus. The possibility of an environmental cause, such as the massive amounts of medicinal mercury or arsenic being prescribed to their patients, especially those with mental illness, wasn't even considered. Because of this, Alfred's ancestry was extremely puzzling. His father, a law school graduate, worked as a chemist. His mother's career as a psychologist was a rarefied position for any woman to hold at that time. His mother's father was also a psychologist with a wife employed as an author and public speaker. The typical picture of degenerate souls coming together to produce further depraved children could not have been any further from reality. Alfred's parents were good people. They were intelligent, responsible professionals who, according to scientific speculation of the day, simply should not have been capable of producing such a child. For a child like Alfred, born into perfect health, with professional parents who were themselves without mental issues, to have developed such a disorder at such a young age without any apparent trauma to trigger it, presented a truly remarkable case to Dr. Connor. Alfred's mother left the clinic as perplexed as the doctor who saw them. No one, not even the nation's preeminent child psychiatrist, had ever seen a child resembling Alfred, his case so unique it wouldn't even make it into the 500-page child psychiatry opus Dr. Connor was working on. Unbeknownst to either of them, Alfred was not, in fact, alone. Another Austrian psychiatrist, one who had not left his homeland, had also begun to see children who were similar to Alfred show up in his clinic, several of them, and tried to raise the alarm. Like Dr. Connor, his accounts would go largely ignored. Although a war was brewing in nearby Germany, doctors in Austria had a more pressing problem to deal with, a massive outbreak of diphtheria, the likes of which the country had never seen before.